Welcome to the Monitor Daily Podcast. It's Friday, November 22nd. Thanks for joining us. I'm Laurent Belsey.
And I'm Linda Feldman.
I'll never forget the day my city editor pulled me aside with a piece of advice. It was 1979 in Michigan, my first college internship at a newspaper, the Jackson Citizen-Patriot. Local journalism is where you can make a difference, he said. 2 years later, I chucked his advice and joined the Monitor. While reporting in Michigan this fall, I returned to Jackson to see what had happened in 40 years. I was saddened to find the Citizen-Patriot building boarded up. Now owned by MLive Media Group, the CitPat is smaller, like Jackson itself, and more digital than print. The publication's website lists 4 reporters. What has that meant for local news? It's more democratic, says John Bertka, a local restaurateur. In newspapers' heyday, restaurants worked hard to influence the local food critic. Now they rely on customers' online reviews. Today's MLive reporters are more prolific and efficient than we were, but those stories are more surface level, says Mayor Derek Dobies. Of course, the story I remember most vividly wasn't particularly deep either. A state trooper's police dog had won an award. I quickly learned how intimate journalism can be. The trooper was so excited during my interview and revealed so much about himself that I felt this heavy responsibility to tell his story with fairness and clear-eyed compassion. So maybe my old city editor was onto something. We can have a big impact by going local, not in a geographical sense necessarily, but by making connections, one-on-one, exposing humanity as well as news. No matter where we are or what form, digital or print, our stories take. Now to our 5 stories. We look at the decision to leave valuable assets buried underground in the Netherlands, an effort to help foster children feel at home, and the power of scripture as an art form. Our first story. One hoped-for byproduct of the search for truth is consensus. Judged by the impact of the last 2 weeks of open house impeachment hearings, the nation is no closer to that consensus.
2 weeks of public hearings in the House impeachment inquiry attempted to present a coherent story about a complicated situation, irregularities in the conduct of American foreign relations with Ukraine, a nation still struggling with the effects of domination as part of the former Soviet Union. The hearings pushed many Democrats in the House ever closer to voting for President Donald Trump's impeachment. But it appears they did not move the vote of a single House Republican. All seem set to say no in an impeachment roll call. The result is a nation where it was before, with Congress split among partisan lines that roughly mirror popular opinion about impeachment, close to a 50-50 cleavage if polls are accurate. In her opening statement Thursday, former White House Russia advisor Fiona Hill pleaded for Americans to disregard the fictions about Ukraine promoted by U.S. adversaries and focus on the true dangers that face them, including anger itself. When we are consumed by partisan rancor, we cannot combat these external forces as they seek to divide us, degrade our institutions, and destroy the faith of the American people in our democracy, she said. This story was reported by Peter Greer for The Monitor.
2 years ago this month, Zimbabwe's longtime leader, Robert Mugabe, was pushed out of power, sparking fervent hopes for change. Today's strike is dangerous for doctors and patients alike, but shows a refusal to let go of that hope.
On a recent Saturday in Harare, outside Zimbabwe's largest hospital, the parking lots are empty. Inside, operations run with a skeleton staff, and most arrivals are turned away or find their own way in the hospital's ghostly wards. Since early September, hundreds of young doctors have been striking, protesting salaries whose value has halved, then halved again, and widespread shortages of medicines and basic supplies that they say make helping patients next to impossible. It's a predicament that looks a lot like the country's. Inflation recently topped 300%, the second highest rate in the world. Zimbabweans face shortages of hard currency, fuel, and basic foods like bread. 2 years ago, when longtime ruler Robert Mugabe was pushed from power, excitement about the prospects for reform rose high, but has dramatically dropped under new president Emmerson Mnangagwa. As yet, doctors' demands have been unmet, but they have renewed international attention to the country's economic collapse and its human consequences. "It's not only about the low salaries," says Tapiwa Chaganda, an associate professor at the University of Johannesburg. "It's also a matter of dignity for doctors and patients. They've signed up to the Hippocratic Oath to do no harm, but in these conditions, how do you even begin to assist your patients?" This story was reported by Tawanda Karambo and Ryan Lenora Brown in Harare, Zimbabwe, for The Monitor.
Around the world, climate-conscious nations are scrambling to figure out how to wean off fossil fuels. But in one energy-rich country, that push has little to do with climate change.
For more than half a century, the Groningen natural gas field in the north of the Netherlands has kept the country warm and its businesses humming. It has earned the government nearly $500 billion, and there is still a lot of gas left underground, about $80 billion worth. So why are they turning the taps off? Because local people want them to. They have been complaining about subsidence linked to gas extraction for decades, and countless tremors have damaged thousands of homes. But a particularly severe quake in 2012 caught the government's attention, and it has been winding down production for several years now. Some people are worried that when the gas revenue dries up, there will be less money to compensate victims for their blighted homes. But environmentalists are delighted by the disappearance of a big fossil fuel source. René Pass, Groningen's top executive, says he is looking forward to the challenge. "This is a province that is really motivated to make the change from fossil fuels to a new kind of energy," he says. This story was reported by Simon Montlake in Loppersum, Netherlands, for The Monitor.
How can a stranger's home feel more like your own? For kids in foster care, a sense of belonging may start with belongings. This nonprofit eases the transition by trading trash bags for a care pack tote, a self-worth boost.
Rob Shear grew up as the youngest of 10 children, living with an abusive father and a mother addicted to drugs. After his parents died, Mr. Shear wound up in foster care at the age of 12, carrying what few belongings he had in a trash bag. He distinctly remembers taking his first shower in his new home, with a bar of soap already used by a family he barely knew. Mr. Shear was troubled by the lack of dignity afforded to children in the U.S. foster system. He decided to act. Along with his husband, Mr. Shear founded Comfort Cases in 2013. Based in Rockville, Maryland, Comfort Cases provides children in the foster system with proper bags packed with shampoo, blankets, pajamas, and more that are sent to family service agencies across the country. The nonprofit has served more than 85,000 children in all 50 states. "We think these are bad kids and forgotten kids and invisible kids," he says. "But in the end, they are your kids. They are my kids. They are our kids. The kids don't belong to the system. They belong to us." This story was reported by David Karras in Rockville, Maryland, for The Monitor.
Studying a holy text can become a habitual task instead of a mindful exercise. So when religion scholar Karen Armstrong discovered that the Bible was originally performed as a chant, she was inspired to rethink her understanding of the spiritual imagination and what that means for the daily practice of faith. You can find a full Q&A with Ms. Armstrong and a Monitor correspondent in today's issue or at csmonitor.com/daily. Now, commentary on Hong Kong elections from the Monitor's editorial board. Hong Kong takes a break Sunday from months of pro-democracy protests to actually practice democracy. Voters will elect local district councils in what are the only elections still not fully pre-cooked following China's takeover of the former British colony 22 years ago. Given the surge in people registering to vote in this election, Beijing's non-democratic rulers could be handed an objective measure of Hong Kong's desire for freedom, civic rights, and rule of law. Voter registration has set a record. If pro-democracy candidates win a majority of district seats in the election, it will show strong support for the protests and might even influence who is chosen as Hong Kong's chief executive in 2022. Most of all, it would demonstrate that Beijing's model of governance, which is now one-man rule under Communist Party chief Xi Jinping, is losing its appeal. Hong Kong prefers a system in which candidates compete for votes by their ideas and respect for individual rights, rather than one that relies on force to keep a regime in power. That's a wrap for the news. You can find the full-length versions of these stories in today's issue or at csmonitor.com/daily. Thanks for joining us today. Come back Monday for a look at how President Trump has changed U.S. Mideast policy. In today's Christian Science Spiritual Perspective column, our contributor writes that when we're faced with challenges or regrets, understanding our inseparability from God enables us to put our ego aside and feel God's hope-bringing, redeeming grace. You can find the column in today's issue or at csmonitor.com/daily. We want to give a quick thanks to our staff, including today's audio production team, Noah Robertson and Jeff Curtin.
This podcast is produced by the Christian Science Monitor. Copyright 2019.